Okay, hi everybody, and welcome to. I think this is our eighth. I may have lost count, but I think this is our eighth Dissipation of Glamour webinar. Very glad to see those of you who could make it be present. It's such an important activity that we're involved in, and it's very esoteric work. And very, very necessary, as the Tibetan has said so often about this work and about the triangles work. It's indispensable. Olivia Tuya and I started this version of the Glamour webinars, but there are others, I'm sure, that are doing this work in your own private groups. And to all of you who are working along this line, we give our strong encouragement, as maybe no one will ever see the work that we do, and that's quite okay if we manage to clarify our own lives, especially the Kama monastic tendencies that have to be sort of cleared up before the second initiation. We will have been doing something. DK says that, well, the majority of disciples in the world are struggling somewhere between the first and second degree, and he says that between those degrees, there is a constant attempt to get clear, to become clear in one's thought, and to disengage one's thought from one's feeling apparatus so that your thought is not adversely affected by biases and emotional tendencies. So this is where the fifth ray comes into all of our work. Well, there are, I imagine we'll be gathering people as we go along here, but I see you here and recognize a lot of names, and I'm very happy that you're joining us. I won't mention names right now, but we're a growing group, and we continue this week after week. We do have here an upcoming Blue Rose Sisterhood Initiation Mystery Week, and I do hope and trust that we'll be able to continue while we're doing that rather intensive activity. Next week, of course, we will be in the AM, 5 AM GMT. And I know that's pretty early for some of you, but we deeply appreciate your attendance. I think what I'd like to do here is begin our work with the great invocation, which you can, say aloud in the place where you are, if you can say it aloud in the place where you are, because this is the mantram of light and power, and as we know, it is our major instrument for bringing about the preparing men's minds and hearts for the reappearance of the Christ and for the externalization of the hierarchy. And it was this was not lightly given. As you may know, Sanat Kumara gave permission for this word of power, this mantram, to be used only after the Christ had agreed that he would not just reappear, maybe astrally or etherically, as he is at presently doing, but actually put in an appearance in his Maya Virupa, his will-created vehicle, during the Aquarian age. Even the Buddha doesn't have to do that. The Buddha and the Christ will be in close cooperation during this whole time, but the Christ will take the brunt of the task upon himself by appearing in such a way that every eye shall see him, as it is said. Now, whether every eye will recognize him is another matter, because DK has also said that he comes for his own. I suppose that is for those of us who do recognize who he is, and of course his influence will affect all of humanity. And one of the things I thought really amazing is that when he comes, it will signal that humanity, in its upper bracket, so to speak, has taken the first initiation, for which we are all preparing. So we realize that the reappearance of the Christ, though imminent, cannot be immediate. There's so much that has to be cleared before he can safely appear, because it will be such an energy that if we don't succeed in ridding the astral plane of some of the prevalent glamours, humanity could become extremely unbalanced. So the Christ, who is a member of Shambhala, knows the meaning of the exquisite touch, just perfectly measured, and he will know the moment when it is possible for him to reappear safely. And before that happens, in the five planetary centers with which we are familiar, certain masters have established themselves. Their disciples have to be gathered around them, and the local governments in their area of planetary influence have to be looking towards them for wisdom and good advice. So you can see we are away from that. But we're doing our part in the clarification of glamour in our own lives and in the world to prepare the astral plane so that there are not terrible distortions surrounding this reappearance. Let's start with the great invocation together, everybody. And my pitch pipe is somewhere. Well, we'll just have to go with whatever note the Om ends up being on. Okay. Great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Well, I know that so many of us use this invocation every day, and maybe more than once a day. And when we're doing our triangles work, and it's just part of our thought process, and as DK has told us, if we use it, we cannot help but change our lives, transform our lives. So we're very privileged in a way, probably in ways that we cannot even realize, to have received this shambolic word of power the invocation for light and power, as it is called. And of course, the love energy is included, which is, in a way, is the most important. So, you know, when you do your triangles work and when you get into your alignment as you do your work on the individual glamours that you may have detected in your life, no easy task, and when you're thinking about the kind of camomonastic atmosphere that has to be clarified in humanity, do, you know, use the invocation for your alignment. Well, you know, things continue in ways that are very distressing in many respects. We have this, just a lot of violence going on in the world, and it's like every week you're reading about some attack on innocent people, all based upon some distorted and highly aggravated sense of idealism, which is extremely narrow. I think I better go through the glamours of the sixth ray tonight. If I haven't done that, well, if I have done it, it's okay too, because it's a review. DK says here, interesting thing, he says there are, you know, we're talking about destructiveness. People are being destroyed, their lives are being destroyed, interfered with, property is being destroyed, that's the least of it. You know, lives are being interrupted because of the great glamour of hatred and the attitude, the mental attitude of separativeness. And we've been working on that, hatred and separation. And those things are operative, too, in the United States election. You know, the blue and the red. You know, maybe one should stay out of politics when discussing these matters. But basically, blue is the color of the second ray. And there is some sixth ray blue as well, but the Martian red is the lower color of the sixth ray. And in the United States, we have a second ray and sixth ray personality, second ray soul, sixth ray personality, the blue and the red. And that's going to have a very, very strong world influence depending on which way this Geminian decision is made. Hillary Clinton apparently has a Gemini ascendant. There's some dispute about her horoscope. She's a Scorpio, so she'll, you know, if she gets in, she'll really be up against pretty dramatic oppositional forces. But on the other hand, the Gemini is a sign of love, wisdom, and it's her rising sign. Otherwise, she's a double Scorpio. I happen to think that it's true that she's that there are two, let's put it like this, that her rising sign is Gemini, and that she's not a double Scorpio. Donald Trump, I know I'm wandering here a little bit, but, you know, there's so much glamour involved in some of this political process, and people get all excited in their emotional bodies and have difficulty thinking clearly. He is a Gemini, but that's his sun sign. And his ascendant is Leo, the 29th. Very interesting. He has about the 29th degree of Leo, representing, of course, the flamboyant personality as his rising sign. And Hillary Clinton has the 29th degree of Gemini. You know, both the critical degrees are found there. So it's going to be very interesting to see how all of this works out. I don't think anybody can exactly predict the outcome. There are pros and cons along the way. Let's just say it will have world implications, and I think that as we work to overcome the glamour of hatred and separativeness, it will aid in the process of bringing the love, wisdom, energy into people's minds when they look towards the future and they vote for the future. DK talks here about destruction. And, you know, destruction is not necessarily a bad thing. It depends on what his motivation may be. There are two lines of destruction. That which is meted out by human beings with no understanding of the life purpose, who act blindly and ignorantly, prompted by selfish desire, by love of power, or by hatred. Okay, well, we've seen a lot of that. You know, your reward will be in heaven, except it's a very materialistic reward. And of course, when you are busy blowing people up, and yourself too, there's a tremendous sense of power, and obviously the hatred is all-consuming. There is also that which is permitted by the soul in due and right time. And it comes when a new vehicle of expression is demanded by the indwelling life. We all know the story. According to our inner consciousness, so the outer vehicle is created. And when we outgrow in our consciousness the outer vehicle, then of course it must be relinquished and a new, more adequate vehicle through the reincarnational process provided for us. Therefore, there is much destruction permitted by the custodians of the plan. Those are the masters who work on the atmic plane, where the spiritual will is known and where they can formulate the plan according to the purpose, and much evil turned into good. Because the end is seen from the beginning, that's the nature of purpose, seeing the end from the beginning, and the consciousness is ripe enough in experience to relinquish the form because of the sensed benefits to be gained. I had an old teacher, a wonderful man. He really got me started on the right path long ago. And I studied with him for 7 years, or maybe say I listened with my mouth shut, which is unusual for me. And he taught me the difference between, it's almost like a fruit tree. You know, he says, there is the cling stone peach and the free stone peach. Now, probably all of you have had the experience of eating a peach. And as you know, there are some peaches, when you open them, the stone just falls out. The pit falls out because it's ready to go, and it doesn't grab all the pulp as you are preparing to eat the peach. And there's also the cling stone peach, which is adhesive. And you know, you just can't get it out without dragging a lot of that intermediary, the fruit, along with it. Well, which would we rather be? This is a story about detachment and about being ripe enough in experience to relinquish the form because of the sense benefits to be gained. So may we achieve that inner freedom which will make of us the free stone peach and not the cling stone peach. Very tough when you're dealing with second-rate people, you know, who are little clingy and have a lot of attachment and have to work on that. Even the Buddha, the great Buddha, you know, he stayed with humanity, the path of earth service, for 2,500 years, and it wasn't even supposed to be his path because he loved humanity so much, and in a way he was so attached to humanity, and therefore he taught detachment. Well, there's a lot of lesson in that for us. So anyway, we sense we're ripe enough. We're ripe enough. That's what an initiate is. Ripe in experience to go through the next process. This is true of individuals, of nations and races. Sensitivity to world suffering is a great and divine characteristic. It really softens you up, and the pain experienced by the fourth-ray humanity is what gives it this sensitivity to suffering. You know, maybe, well, I don't know, maybe the second-ray type suffers the most. We're told that the second-ray type agonizes its way towards the goal, but I would say the fourth-ray gives it a good second because there's so much turmoil and friction and agony involved in it, and those will be our rays as humanity, the second and the fourth-ray. So, sensitivity to world suffering is a great and divine characteristic. When, however, it is qualified by emotion, it becomes separative in interpretation and focused in partisanship. I'm only for this, I'm only for that. You know, the sixth ray is operative here. I love who I love and I hate whom I hate, and that's just partisan. And thus develops into a glamour and an illusion, if the mind is brought to play into it, confusing the real issue and blinding men to the divine facts. So this is what we're up against. This is what we're up against when we deal with the present conditions in the world, and really they're pretty terrible from a certain point of view. Both decay Alice Bailey are said to have had a horror of glamour. H-O-R-R-O-R, a horror of glamour, realizing the terrible conditions into which it can lead people, albeit idealistically and fully committed to their path, but on the wrong track. So let us not be like those people who are on the wrong track. Anyway, we are supposed to avoid the vortex of the great glamour of hatred. It's the fifth of the heads of the Hydra, and we must find a way. I've read some of this before, to avoid this. Now, what I'm going to do, I think I'll go right into, well, I'll tell you what. I love this one. This is from the Blessed Ones. Now, if you ever think that the monad is not dealt with by the Tibetan, if you just go into that book, Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, just around page 30, 32, 33, right in there, you're going to find monadic psychology laid out for you. It's the whole story about how the monad, or the Blessed One, descends into incarnation and what it must do to retrace its steps and to redeem the lives around it. Some of you are familiar with the labors of Hercules for Pisces, called basically the rescuing of the red cattle of Geryon. Well, you know, we're all red cattle. We're all afflicted by desire. And the monad descends to bring them into the chalice and rise until we are purified. And, of course, we have to overcome the lower meaning of the color red to do that. The higher meaning of the color red is related to the first ray. So, you know, he talks about what lies before us. And I love this. We are treading the way of purification, and step by step, all that we cherish is removed. I wonder if we're ready for that. You know, it's a fourth degree thing. Lust for form, life, desire for love, and the great glamour of hatred. That's what we're really dealing with now, that central glamour out of the nine. Number five, fear, hatred, and ambition. Okay. These disappear and we stand purified and empty. The distress of emptiness is the immediate result. It grips us and we feel that the price of holiness is too high. You know, he's obviously talking about his own experience here. But standing on the way, not just the path, but the way, suddenly the whole being is flooded with light and love, and the emptiness is seen as constituting that through which light and love may flow to a needy world. The purified one can dwell then in that place where dwell the blessed lords. These are liberated monads, or at least they are liberated into the fifth kingdom of nature and have taken the fifth initiation. You're not really a liberated monad, maybe until the seventh initiation. But anyway, the blessed lords are the very high beings. Some of the Chohans are that, and certainly the Buddhas of higher degree. The purified one can dwell then in that place where dwell the blessed lords, and from that place go forth to illumine the world of men and of deities. So I guess there are certain of the Deva kingdom that need that illumination as well, because the Devas are called the Shining Ones, which does not necessarily mean that they are totally liberated. Well, now, I'll tell you what, before I get into before I get into some of the sixth ray glamours, which are relevant here, in the middle of our decisive period for humanity, you know, I'm afraid all be learning the hard way, but at least we'll learn. Are there any questions or comments that you would like to offer? Any questions or comments? And either BL or Joe will help us with if you write something down and I need to hear something about it. Or, you know, or any one of our staff can answer this if they wish, Olivia or Tuya or any of our staff if they would like to. But do you have anything you would like to say up to this point? And then we'll get into the sixth ray glamours, which are so rampant in the world today and so destructive, because it's not the positive side of the sixth ray we're seeing right now, but we're seeing it's in its destructive retracting cycle. The rheologist Stephen Pugh has done a lot with this, talking about the difference between the outgoing cycle and the incoming cycle, and somewhere along the line in the incoming cycle, the power of destruction is very strong, and the ray is not operating in its most positive method. Okay, anything you'd like to say or question?
I don't see anything, Michael.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a chance also after.
You do have a hand up.
Okay, there is. Okay, Nicholas. All right, there you go.
Yep. Talking about innocent people and innocence, up to an aspect of the sixth ray, and not only of the sixth ray, is the proposition that no one is innocent when it is, when the thing has to do with armies in conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So when such a military spirit is occurring, no one is considered as innocent, but as a supporter of the army of the enemy.
All's fair in love and war. So the expression goes. And of course, we don't know the karma. We don't know what draws people together to be at a certain place. And, you know, there's something called the law of compensation. It is possible that some untoward, unexpected, and unjustified acts may be inflicted upon people who don't deserve them. But as Ralph Waldo Emerson brought forward in his essay on compensation, and as other theosophical writers have mentioned, there will be compensation if such is the case. If this is not a repayment, you know, in that respect, if it's not a repayment for things done ill or badly, then there will be compensation. Nevertheless, we cannot, one of the greatest sins is to interrupt the process of an incarnating soul. And that's just murder, you know. And if we have a very strong Mars-Pluto situation in the world today, and if you put Mars and Pluto together, you get an extreme form of violence. And obviously, that is not along the line of the higher self, the solar angels, Christ considered as the morning star. It's not along the Venusian line, which is trying to redeem our planet. It may be necessary for a while that this kind of stuff occurs, but, you know, it will have its term, you know. So it's a complicated situation, and you know, someone knows what the karma really is and whether it's justified or not. Okay, but, you know, all's fair in love and war. There we go. And some people consider this to be a war. It's a civilizational war being fought out on the inner planes at this moment between the adherents of Mars and the adherents of Venus. And, of course, in this particular case, Venus has to win. What that will look like, well, maybe the Christ will instruct us about that. I hope so. Thank you, Nicholas. Okay, any other thoughts that you'd like to share or questions? Right.
No, I don't see anything.
Okay. All right. Well, look, here's what one of the things we'll do. I want to look at the glamour of the sixth ray. You know, some of us are afflicted by that occasionally. All right, so these are glamours of the sixth ray, and maybe, you know, you will find these in your own nature.
Michael,
Oh, yes, go ahead.
Sorry.
Tuija, go ahead, speak.
Here is Tuija.
Yes, speak.
Yes, I was thinking about this Mars and Pluto at this moment when we think about how they are related to the solar plexus, and they are the they are both non-sacred planets, even though Pluto is not considered as a planet nowadays, but we yes, and their connection to the sacral center and what we and the solar plexus, the influence that we see nowadays. But what is interesting when we think about Pluto and where it is situated at this moment, that it is in Capricorn, and how Pluto then later lives of man, how it becomes active and becomes alive in higher sense. So that we have to go through the darkness and the smoke of darkness in Scorpio, because both of them are the rulers of Scorpio, and how strongly Scorpio is related to Capricorn. The Scorpio's symbol that we can look as the eagle, and the Aquila, which is about the, and we can think about the last decanate of Capricorn, how this whole idea and the symbolism of Aquila, or even the phoenix, which is rising from the fire. We see nowadays a huge amount of fires going on everywhere in the planet.
And here's the thing the Tibetans said, you know, in esoteric astrology, page 333, I guess, he says that Capricorn consummates the work of Scorpio. And both of these signs and their rulers give you entrance into the hierarchy. They're very, very tough. The experiences are very difficult, and they open the door into the hierarchy because, you know, Scorpio is so connected with Sirius and Capricorn with initiation. So, you know, before the Christ can reappear, we have this situation in which the two planets, which are Pluto, house cleaning, you might say, healing, house cleaning, ejection, throwing things away, being done with them, cutting with the past, you know, that's very operative. And then, of course, Vulcan, which is smashing down the spiritual will and demanding that people conform to it. So there's just no way to escape these two planets at this time, and people will have to act that out. A lot of this stuff is being dragged to the surface, and we have to deal with it.
And is it not so that Pluto is governing also about the burning ground?
It's one of those, Mars and Pluto, both the burning ground, yes. And Uranus later, but Pluto is an important burning ground planet, for sure.
So when we think about these positions, and this power of this tool, and we see concretely the fire, and then the process of initiation, it really must be about that going on in the whole humanity.
We are preparing for the first initiation, and there's no question about it. And much of what goes on in the general scene, filled with all the glamours and the hydra heads, is similar in a larger way to what goes on in the life of the individual disciple when they prepare for the first initiation, or for the second, or even for the third. Okay.
Exactly.
So we have to face these difficulties. This, you know, devotion, let's look at some of these glamours. It's a great thing. The soul has tremendous devotion. The monad is called a lord of ceaseless, persevering devotion, and descends into the five lower planes in order to redeem the lower lives, but we know that it can get out of hand. So the main thing about it is you don't have that wide love of the second ray, at least not until the sixth ray is cured of its narrowness, as long as it doesn't warp the vision, and as long as the it doesn't see that one thing is absolutely more valuable than something else, which is really equally valuable. say, or even greater. So it really narrows the vision, and you get devoted to some idealistic kind of tendency, and it just gives you a very, very partial picture, very, very distorted. We've seen people devoted to things, and we wonder, how in the world can they be devoted to that? It's such a small part of the truth, such a small part of the big picture, and is even distorted. Anyway, we all learn by having our tunnel broken down eventually, and we get into the wider light, but it's very painful along the way. Another glamour, the glamour of adherence. Well, you know, these are all theme and variations on the same thing. A glamour of adherence or attachment to forms and to persons. You know, and as long as you're overly attached, you just cannot be free. What you have to be attached to is your own higher light, your own spirit, your own sense of being. These are the things, not the lower attachments. And that's really what the Buddha tried to teach us. And he had this fantastic reasoning, sixth ray mind, a very, very rare thing, we're told, and he knew all the methods to alert people to their attachments. Because if you're just attached to the lesser things, you're going to exclude the larger picture, which would give you a completed point of view. And when you have a completed point of view, glamour is not possible. Here's another. These are just my comments in red, but you know, anybody could comment how they feel. The glamour of idealism. Well, you know how it goes. There's the idea, there's the ideal, and then there's the idol. And it's even interesting how the word idol has penetrated into the consciousness through the TV programs about being this type of idol or that type of idol. You know, it's the worship of the outer form. But the glamour of idealism, well, okay, do we see things as they really are? Do we see things as they actually are? So it splits the consciousness. The consciousness is no longer seeing reality. It's seeing an exaggerated value placed upon a partial perception. An exaggerated value placed upon a partial perception to which one is extremely attracted and to which one will give all. Okay, well, that's fine. Idealism is a tremendous training for people. And remember, as you go towards the second initiation, it is the sixth ray that we will need as we approach the second initiation. So idealism is very, very strong at that period. At the same time, we have to prove that we will not sacrifice the higher values for our ideals and our passions. And we can't take the second initiation until we have proven that. Theme and variations, really, friends. The glamour of loyalties and of creeds. I used to do a lot of music and conduct choirs and all that kind of thing. And there's this, if you're in the Christian church, you know, you're going to say the Apostles' Creed about how you believe in this and believe in that, and it just reaffirms a particular concrete form of belief which shuts the door to wider considerations. So, you know, creeds and loyalties are good, but we tend to say, as a result of them, only this is important, only that is important, and not this is important, and not that is important. And it may be equally as important, but we don't see the larger point of view. So you know how, you know, if you're loyal to your family members, it's my family, right or wrong. My country, right or wrong. My anything, right or wrong. The my part is accentuated, and when you realize, when you read the integration formula for the sixth ray, I wonder if I could find that, because it's so good, you know. It's in Esoteric Psychology 2, and let's see, my truth, my ideal, maybe it's there. And you'll see what's wrong with it. Look at all these my's. This is for the sixth ray person who wants to get integrated somehow. Okay, I lay my life upon the altar of desire, the seen, the sensed, that which appeals to me, the satisfaction of my need, a need for that which is material, for that which feeds emotion, that satisfies the mind, that answers my demand for truth, for service, and my vision of the goal. It is the vision which I see, the dream I dream, the truth I hold, the active form which meets my need, that which I grasp and understand, my truth, my peace, my satisfied desire, my dream, my vision of reality, my limited ideal, my finite thought of God. For these I struggle, fight, and die. So this is page 371 and 372, and you get the idea of how possessive a person can be in relation to what they believe in, their particular loyalties and their ideas and thoughts and concrete things which they hold clinging to them. Okay, the glamour of emotional response. Well, okay, you can respond sentiently, that's good, but emotional response is not so often constructive. We need a plan-centered engagement with that which we respond to. And then we blind ourselves with emotion. We can't see things as they are, and the emotional response distorts things. So then when we are too emotional, we are in the grip of unreality. And that grip is not what we want if we want to see reality and understand. Here's another one, the glamour of sentimentality. This is one of the things he says you just have to eliminate if you want to do group work. It's one of the very first things. There are four big eliminations for rule number 11, which is all about the fourth initiation in the Rays and the initiation. The glamour of sentimentality is one of them. Sentimental response, personal response, the desire for recognition, and we have to also learn the meaning of occult silence. So Camomanus is ruling here when we allow the emotion to blend with the mind and distort the clarity of mind. So we don't really understand real values when we have this kind of sentimentality. You know, you cling to something because it's familiar and it's been comfortable for you and you love it, and it may not be goal fit at all. I love this one, the glamour of interference. I'm sure I've been guilty of it many times. Okay, we're so assured, so assured that only our ideals are the correct one. One is emotionally prompted to interfere with the expression of other values so that one's ideals have no challenge or competition. You know, if I'm right, you have to be wrong. It's a very bipolar. You know, it's a very split method of looking at reality. It takes the sword of Mars and divides things into their opposites. I may have told this story, but I was once in a doctor's office, and I was in the waiting room, and I was kind of tired, you know, and I was just kind of closing my eyes, waiting for my turn to be called. The next thing I know is a very thin and intense young woman was poking me like this and says, "You're meditating, aren't you? I saw you. You're meditating." You know, well, obviously there's something wrong with meditating. If, you know, she was a, you know, Christian fundamentalist and I was doing something wrong, I wasn't praying, I was meditating. I felt that as a bit of an interference. It stuck with me. I thought it was pretty funny. Actually, I said, "No, I'm sleeping." Okay. The glamour of the lower pairs of opposites. Well, this is maybe not so much a interaction between the soul and personality, although there's that glamour too, where it's of the soul, it's of the personality, and you're caught between their conflict. But this is, you know, you might say sin and virtue. You know, you're always caught, is this... am I doing right? Am I doing wrong? You know, and you're struggling with the temptations of life, and you're caught in moralistic judgments without understanding the larger concept. So there's a lot of conflict in the sixth ray person's life, but there's not so much ability as with the fourth ray to reconcile these conflicts. Then the glamour of world saviors and teachers. Well, you know, there's only one world savior, right? There's only one teacher, and it's my teacher. So I value that particular teacher far above all others, regardless of what the true merits of that teacher may be. So this is really tunnel vision, and this is called the ray of overemphasis, the ray of undue emphasis. Thus, fanaticism, you know, when you just emphasize one thing out of balance, it is undue emphasis, it is fanaticism. So your own guide is the best, and no other guides are, well, you know, I was thinking this horrible thing, you know, we know about how the Christ and the Buddha work together, right? Well, you know, the story goes, this person's in the car, and we're talking about Jesus and the Buddha, and the person says, I just hate the Buddha. You know, I just hate the Buddha. Well, why? Why? Because I believe in Jesus and not the Buddha. And when I was in China, there was this Buddhist monk, you know, he's not exactly from the Dalai Lama school, and he comes up to me and he starts saying, Christians are bad. You know, I dislike Christians. They're no good. You know, something to that effect. It was being translated for me, and I thought, well, wow, you know, lower down on the spiral, even though people are supposedly on the path, there's this dichotomy that's going on where your world teacher is the one and only. All right, the glamour of narrow vision, well, it just speaks for itself. Narrow vision can protect the young soul from becoming confused, but it cannot be sustained over long, or you never get the bigger picture. And finally, the glamour of fanaticism. Throw all your emotional intensity into a person or a pattern or a goal or whatever, and you have to do that above all things. You know, God said, do this, and so regardless of what the consequences are, and regardless of what God, what particular God really said it, you do it. You reject a realistic vision of the whole, and you overemphasize just one part of the whole, which is seen in a distorted manner, because it's not in true relation to any other aspects of that whole or greater picture. Well, look, we've all been there, haven't we? We've all, you know, we've all dealt with these glamours. Chances are, during the last 2,000 years, a lot of us have been on the sixth ray one way or another. You know that the sixth ray soul can become the fourth ray soul or the second ray soul. But it's kind of interesting, because if you're left with the three rays of aspect, if the sixth ray soul can become, I said incorrectly. I do believe it's possible. I believe that someone like the Christ began in Lemuria as a sixth ray soul, took the third initiation in Atlantis as a fourth ray soul, that we have confirmed, and then later became the second ray soul. But the sixth ray can go on to the third ray or the second ray, if it will. Now, not everybody does that, and a lot of people do end their fourth initiation on one of the rays of attribute. You can destroy the causal body in seven different ways, and you can take the fourth initiation even if you are a fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh ray soul. So, this is so built into us. The Piscean energy and the sixth ray energy is so built into us that we carry this with us. And if we are second ray souls, as many of us probably are, you know, many of us, chances are we've spent a good long time, millions of years, on the sixth ray in our soul nature. So this is not really foreign to us whatsoever. Okay, so though that's the kind of rundown on the particular glamours which are plaguing the world at the moment. You just have to look at the political and governmental situations in the world, and you will see these things occurring, and you will see why, if they are allowed to get a total grip on humanity, it could prevent us from entering the Aquarian age as we should. You know, Aquarius is not all light and love. Aquarius can be very, very difficult. It can be disease, epidemics, atomic energy released in the wrong way. you know, the good can be spread or the bad can be spread. So let's not get sentimental about Aquarius. Okay, so open the floor to anyone who would like to say anything about this. And, of course, if you're on the staff, you know, I can't see your hands, so you just have to speak up if you want to talk. I'm going to make this as small as I can, because otherwise we won't see these things in front of our eyes. Okay. Well, we're not going to see these things in front of our eyes anyway. There's just too many glamours, and I've talked about it too much in red. But let me get it even smaller. And then when you cannot see it anymore, you'll be completely free of that particular glamour. All right. Hey, there you go. All right. Now, anything you'd like to say or question, add to, whatever. Maybe do you find yourself at all affected by this? Okay, we have another Carl. I think I see Carl there. Carl, go ahead, please.
I'm here. Okay. Yeah, I lost you for about 15, 20 minutes. I don't know, my computer went AWOL.
Uh-oh.
I finally got you back about 5 minutes ago. But
okay.
Anyhow, what I was thinking is that consciousness kind of flows like a stream or something to that effect. It's always moving, I think. And if we're open to that flow, then we don't get hung up on these glamours to some degree. That the truth will eventually prevail if we allow the flowing through the mind of the consciousness or to that effect, but that we eventually will come to a correct understanding of what the truth is if we don't stop it. And it crystallizes.
Yeah, I think, you know, we all grow out of this stuff. And let's remember, too, that while it is natural for people to fall under the spell of glamour while they're still bewildered by the astral plane, that it was the Black Lodge back in early Atlantean days, and maybe around the time of the third sub-race of the Atlantean race, that threw in purposefully a lot of glamour onto the astral plane and fed inordinate desires, not natural desires, but unwholesome desires, exaggerated desires. So, in a way, we were attacked in terms of glamour. Now, like I say, there is the kind of evil that comes from ignorance, and there's deliberate evil. So this was an act of deliberate evil, attacking those who were subject to the evil of ignorance, and it made it worse. Anyway, we do grow out of it, and eventually, as we begin to bring in the light of the soul and we become interested in spiritual things, we have a certain elevation, a certain pedestal. We'll read about that maybe next time when we continue our readings about the technique of light. You stand upon a certain pedestal, a lighthouse above the astral plane, and you can see how you fall under the waves and are engulfed by those waves. So by now we should be emerging somewhat. So yeah, thank you, Carl. Other thoughts here, anybody? Any impressions, thoughts you would like to share? Anything? Questions?
Not the one. We don't have any questions yet.
No questions yet. Okay. Not the one has all the answers, you understand. But let's just say, you know, these are mistakes in consciousness. They are mistakes in our perception. These are distortions of the truth. These are exaggerations. You know, I don't know if any of you have been to an amusement park, but in the old days, I used to like to go to amusement parks, and I used to like to go into the fun house. It's called the fun house. And in were all kinds of rides, but there was this like hall of mirrors, and every mirror was bent in a peculiar way. Sometimes your head was as big as your whole body. sometimes your feet were as big as your whole body. But the thing about it was, you never saw a true picture of your image. There was always a distortion because of the bending of the mirror. Well, I think we can see the analogy pretty well about how glamour works. If we don't have a nice, Libran, balanced, completed point of view with understanding, you know, if we don't see things in right proportion, we are going to be victims of glamour. Now, the interesting thing is that, you know, Venus tends to give us this right proportion. But Mars, with its intensity, tends to blow things up and divide things and make them out of proportion. So, you know, just look at your own life and where you feel particularly emotional about things and where you feel very, very critical about things. You know, how does it go? Criticism, self-pity, and suspicion are the three major seeds of glamour. Criticism, ray 3, self-pity, ray 2, suspicion or paranoia, ray 1. So if you get worked up about something and you don't know why you are, you know, you have a quick reaction, and it's not a calm reaction either, maybe there's a glamour hiding behind that reaction. Any other thoughts you'd like to share or questions you'd like to ask? Obviously, this is an ongoing study. It takes a long, long time, and it was difficult for that glamour group to really... Well, none of the groups of nine, and there were only four that were fully formulated, were allowed to progress because the World War was on, and DK had to reorganize everything into a group of 24, and some people were let go. They had reached their high water mark for a particular life. And then a new seed group, or a new group of 24, reflecting the number of Shambhala, interestingly, was formulated by him. So I have a feeling that when DK again returns to the outer plane to teach, I believe he will be one of those outer teachers as a master in the externalization. I believe the formation of these seed groups, very occultly brought together and active, will be one of his continuing objectives. He said when he was writing that the seed group work, which included, you know, the trained observers, the observers of reality, group number two, was a 275-year project. Now, here we are, not even 100 years after he worked with Alice Bailey. So there will be more of this developing understanding of how the seed groups are supposed to work, and according to our rays and our interests and our abilities, so our service will be involved with one or other, or maybe more, of these seed groups. Okay, anything, friends?
Michael, you got a hand? Nicholas?
Oh, a hand. Okay. Okay, Nicholas, go ahead. Yeah. You're on self-mute. You got to take yourself off self-mute, Nicholas. You know, it's a green button. A green button should take you off of self-mute, or maybe it will restore the green button, but otherwise we won't be able to hear you. Okay, well, when it comes about, yeah, sometimes these little mechanics are just difficult. Oh, okay, now, yeah, okay, your hand is up again, Nikolaus, but unless you can self-mute.
Can you click on the microphone?
Yeah, good. Click on the microphone. Is that okay? BL is suggesting clicking on the microphone. Otherwise, we won't be able to hear you. But we did hear you before, of course. So, I don't know what to do.
Can you hear me now?
There we go.
Okay, now just memorize what you did. All right, go ahead.
Well, is that a sound?
Yes.
Right. It is quite interesting the fact that ideals in the way the in the manner that the sixth ray is using them are very closely associated to idols, and while in from the first, if you consider, for instance, the Islamic approach or perhaps the Protestant approach, even though when there are not icons in the temples, or there are not any pictures of the saints or the, an image of the god or anything else, you realize immediately that even that, let's say, subtle thought about God is idolized. This is really a problem, because in this manner, what is idolized is the regulation or the sequence of the practices that are used for the training of the aspirants. So, in a manner, training itself becomes an idol of the real and living situation.
Exactly. It gets very concrete.
It happens very often.
You got to use this method. You have to say this word. You have to be in this position. Your head has to be. All of these things become extremely concrete, and there's no real freedom. Of course, look, there are ideals. Obviously, I want to show this chart. I've shown it before, but Keith Bailey of AUM put this together. It's a combination of a number of the Tibetans' charts, but take a look. On the intuitional plane, on the third sublevel of the Buddhic plane, is that particular power or quality or siddhi called idealism. Well, that's nothing like the idealism that you were talking about, Nick, or the concrete idealism, which is almost idolatry. This leads you to the monad. This particular true idealism will lead you to the monad in its number six capacity. I mean, here we don't have the monadic plane shown. But, you know, the monadic plane is the sixth plane. Idealism is related to the sixth ray, and it will lead us into the freedom of the spirit. You see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and it's the highest of the senses. The sense of smell, we're told, is transmuted into idealism. But this is a high form, and it's not that concretizing, prejudiced, narrowing, restricting enforcement which people demand of themselves and of others, which is the really dangerous thing. The so-called forced conversion, of which both Islam and Christianity have been guilty in past centuries. How can you compel a person's beliefs? It's ridiculous. Anyway, they're not grown up enough yet to see that. Thank you, Nikolaos. Thank you. Okay, anything else? Because probably, you know, when we get going on our meditation, which is going to be about glamour, you know, of hatred and separation, separativeness, then we're not going to... Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm sorry if you lost sound. I've been noticing some people say they've lost sound. Well, you know, we're still in the early years of this kind of communication, so we'll do the best we can under the circumstances. Okay, so Biel or Joe, do you see anything else? Or?
No, I don't see anything else.
Okay. All right. Very good. Then let's do this meditation. It is, you know, as DK says, it can be it can be done expeditiously. It's not necessarily a meditation which needs to be prolonged. But we may take a little while, because in group form you have to have a regular process, otherwise the group cannot follow it. So we're working because of humanity's very important decisions between its soul nature and its personality nature. The epitome of this, of course, is given in a number of places of the world, but the present U.S. election is, I think, part of that, you know, because of these fateful decisions that humanity is making, we have to do our work in the outer world. Now, we can't do this exactly as DK has prescribed it, but we can do something. So let us begin with silence, not 10 minutes of silence, and not the naming of all the group members as we would do if we had 9 people, but we will think about the soul nature. And we will abstract ourselves from outer preoccupation and leave behind our attention to the personality nature, and we will focus upon the plane of mind, but that focus allows the impression of the higher mind, where our egoic lotus is found, where our, what's usually called our soul nature at this stage of evolution, is found. And in the little bit of silence, we'll imagine the communion between the soul and our group mental focus. The light of the soul is pouring into the personality mechanism, and we get the sense of being united in the group soul. And in that, my consciousness is your consciousness is my consciousness, there is one group consciousness, ideally considered. And we realize we are all working together in different countries, different continents, and our purpose here, the dissipation of world glamour, and we're focusing particularly on the glamour of hatred and the glamour of separateness, separativeness. They go together. Now, this is not light work, and a protective formula is needed. So we say these words, and when we make the sign of the cross, it's from the middle of the forehead to the chest and then to the two eyes, left, right. So, the words. Aloud, as a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. Now, in preparation, as we have done before, we consider the light of matter and the light of mind. And we focus these two on the plane of mind. We imaginatively draw up the light of matter and blend it with the light of mind. So the vitality and the ability to think and understand, these are blended. And then we meditate on soul contact and on the recognition of soul light. The light of the angel of the presence becoming something real to us, and we bring that light, that soul light, which sees, which understands, we bring it together with the two lesser lights, and we blend the three lights upon the plane of mind. We do this imaginatively. When these three lights are imaginatively blended, we say together, followed by the sacred word three times, the following. The light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Now we say together, radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light, we work and turn the darkness into day. We have a great searchlight that we have created. That searchlight is turning its light upon the astral plane, and in a sense, the group searchlight. Not just the individual, but the group searchlight is turned upon the astral plane. Visualize this. Using together our mutual abilities. Reinforcing each other in one group movement. We call upon the spiritual will as a group. This is the atomic plane working through the jewel and the lotus and through the will synthesis petal and through the entire sacrifice, the mental petals of the egoic lotus. Call upon the spiritual will, which is the will that sees the divine plan through into manifestation. And as we remember, that spiritual will reinforces our beam of light, our searchlight. It becomes more intensely powerful because of the will behind it. The will which impels it. And we all say together, with power. power upon its beam. The light is focused on the goal. Think of the glamour to be dissipated. We name it. In this case, we're combining two things which are really one thing. The glamour of hatred and separativeness. That great searchlight is going to come in contact on the astral plane with this very compelling glamour, which people justify so potently in their psyche. And as we visualize this happening, this, our beam, powerfully encountering the glamour of hatred and separativeness, we say these words of power. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of hatred and separateness. Power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour, the vitality behind the glamour. And our light, our group beam, is penetrating into the glamour and producing its weakening and its dissipation. So we'll take some minutes and we'll see, with our creative imagination, we'll see this happening. The appearance is negated The quality is negated. The life is negated. The clouds are dispersed. And the great sun, the symbol of the soul, shines where before there was glamour and distortion. And so we withdraw the group beam, refocusing ourselves and refocusing the group upon the mental plane. We turn our attention away from the astral plane. And as DK says here, we shut off the searchlight of the soul. To be reawakened when we do this on our own or when we do it as a group. We want to really feel the energies that we're working with, not just get caught in the concepts, but the creative imagination can do that, you know, it can put us in touch with the energies. And so now, all of us, not in sequence, but together, let us sound the Om. First as an individual, then as a group, and then as if the entire new group of world servers is sounding the Om. Okay, friends, thank you. We will meet again. Our next, it's going to be the AM time. It's on the 5th of August, 5 AM GMT. Hopefully it's not too terrible for you. And we will continue to turn our thoughtful attention to the kinds of decisions which humanity is now required to make. And we want to bring our meditative assistance to those decisions. It's a bit precarious at the moment. And I'm not just speaking about the United States. I'm speaking about everywhere in the world. There's a tendency towards extremism and the recrudescence of the undesirable aspects of the sixth ray. And that can make things go out of control and out of the control of the soul. And we stand for the soul and we stand for soul control. May the soul control the outer form and life and all events and bring to light the love which underlies the happenings of the times. So maybe we can realize that somehow, even though it may not seem so, love does underlie the happenings of the times. Tomorrow, in our Ask broadcast, we'll be dealing not with a particular nation, but with the idea of the soul of humanity coming through and expressing itself through the personality of humanity. This is a largely a Ray 4, Ray 5 issue at the moment, but eventually it will be a Ray 2, Ray 4 issue. And we want to contribute to the strengthening of the soul of humanity and thus to all the national, the soul of all nations. We'll be resuming that in a while. We have an event here that requires our attention, so we'll be looking at things in general. Then on Sunday, we'll continue our meditation on attracting money, that flowing golden substance representing the third aspect of divinity, attracting money for hierarchical purposes so we can actually manifest the divine plan instead of just thinking about it, admiring it, being devoted to it, loving it, you know, actually manifesting the divine plan. So this this will be available on Makara pretty soon, this particular webinar. And if you have friends who would like to participate in it but have not been able to make the time, at this time, please do let them know. Okay, well, I want to thank you for showing up and meditating together. And let us continue our subjective work on behalf of humanity and in cooperation with the hierarchy, spiritual hierarchy of our planet. We'll see you now, and thank you. Bye-bye.